In the last episode, you heard about the tormented and terrifying side of my friend Ben, but I knew the other side of him. Like most people who knew him, including his patients as an oral surgeon. In this episode, you'll learn about Dr. Furst from totally different perspectives. His mother, Nancy, and her now deceased husband, Don, adopted Ben when he was 3 months old. Ben didn't talk much to me about his parents or upbringing. He avoided the subject. Nancy took the time to tell me about it. I'm especially grateful given how difficult it is for anyone to come forward under such circumstances. Over many weeks and conversations, I got to know her, and I'm frankly not just impressed by her courage and candor, but also the highly principled and supportive environment in which she and Don raised him.
He was shy as a child, which I know is hard to believe, but he was very shy. And I've reconnected with an old neighbor who he used to walk to school with her daughter when we still lived in Pennsylvania. And she remembered him being very shy. He didn't want to meet people. He would kind of hide behind me. He was very bright. He spoke very early. And he was a good kid.
When Ben was about 6 years old, the family moved to Florida, Miami, including Ben's sister, Melissa,
who was also adopted.
Even in his younger years, Nancy observed that the future doctor's interests were abundantly clear.
He was always interested in medicine, although he didn't say it was medicine, but he would take Melissa's dolls and undress them and draw skeletons on them.
Although that may seem a bit unusual, normal is the word that comes to mind in learning in detail about Ben growing up.
However, Ben was in a terrible car wreck in which he was a passenger around the age of 17, a friend behind the wheel. He was lucky to even have survived and required plastic surgery on his own neck to repair the disfiguring injuries. It's possible he suffered a severe concussion, though not examined or tested for such effects, which was not as routine in that era as it is now. His interest in becoming a doctor remained steadfast.
Because I had been in the medical field, I had all of my workbooks, and he would love to read them and go through them. Since I'm an only child, I don't know too much about sibling rivalry, but she would say, you like him better, and he would say, you like her better, you know, things like that. But he always defended her. When they were in high school, he worked at an ice cream place in a mall, like an open-air mall, and she was there one night, and some guy was coming on to her and was saying inappropriate things, and Ben threw him out of the ice cream store. He invited her to University of Florida when he was an undergrad there. He invited her up a couple of times to visit him, and he was very protective of her. And if any of the guys would make a remark or anything about her, he would get in their face and tell them to leave her alone.
Ben's shyness as a boy didn't last.
He became much more sociable in high school. He was quiet prior to that, but then he became much more sociable and he became a ladies' man.
The household was staunchly opposed to guns.
My father-in-law was killed with a gun and my husband was very anti-guns. And Ben always had a curiosity about guns. And I thought maybe it was because we made a big deal about he couldn't have toy guns.
And as their son grew old enough to own a gun, he didn't hesitate in getting his first real one. The once shy and reserved Ben completed his undergraduate degree at UF and set his sights on one of the country's most prestigious medical schools, the University of Pennsylvania. The cost was astronomical and took a toll, including heavy debt Ben incurred as a result. His father made a good living, specializing in sales of imported ceramic dolls that are typically sold on Home Shopping Network, for example, based in St. Petersburg. However, it was a struggle to just cover his room and board at Penn, which his parents did, despite the considerably lower cost overall option available to him at UF. To Ben, that meant remaining in a location too remote for his increasingly ambitious tastes. He met his future wife of 17 years, Mary, at Penn. She spoke to me and my wife, Lucy, about the chance encounter.
I had finished architecture in Venezuela, and I had 6 months in between getting my license to work as an architect. and just had finished up my thesis in Trinity. And so my dad asked me, what do you want to do? I have been going to Philadelphia before because my sister was she was doing two masters at Drexel in engineering. And so, you know, that Penn and Drexel follow each other, like one campus ends, the next one starts.
So, oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, you can walk the whole entire thing. So my, I told my dad, well, I'm just going to go to Philadelphia and hang around with my sister. Well, you know, and he's like, how long do you want to go? I'm like, 6 months. And so I took a plane, left. I met Ben probably within a month after I got there. I decided that I wanted to go to the museum at Penn, and there was this young girl there, Venezuelan too, that she wanted just to hang around in the campus. It was the end of the semester, so it had to be June. All the schools were already done with classes, but dental school was the first year for Ben there. He had one test, one last test. So yeah, I think it was June. Early June. It had to be early June. And so she said, if I go with you to your boring museum, then you have to sit down and hang around and look at guys walk by. I was like, okay. So we came to the museum, and after the museum, we went into what is called Locust Walk. It's like the walk that crosses the whole campus, and you know where they have like a bench with Benjamin Franklin sitting, like a statue, like a golden statue. Sat across, like we sat on the side of that one, on the other side of the
a different board. Benjamin. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. That was the funny part, and we were facing Benjamin Franklin. So she kept going like a reader, looking around, and I'm like, okay, we've been sitting here for a long time, nobody's walking by, just like, you know, it was empty, the whole school had fled. So she's like, just five more minutes. I'm like, okay. So all of a sudden she goes, she says, don't turn around, there's this guy sitting behind us in the there were tables. And I always had a thing for guys at the time that were wearing like running shoes. I couldn't stand a guy wearing running shoes. I like a guy dressed up, you know, even if it was shorts, it had to. And I go and I say, what shoes is he wearing? And she goes and says, he's wearing boat shoes. I'm like, you're lying. You're such a liar. I'm like, I'm going to turn around and look. And she's like, go ahead. I'm not lying. And I turned around and I was like, oh my God. I took a quick pic and then I had to turn
around.
You
looked at his feet first?
Yeah, I looked at his feet and he was wearing like Sperry's. I don't know what
it
was.
And you jumped in feet first all?
No. So I go and I look back and I can see that he looked at us. And I go and I say, he's going to leave. He's going to leave. But I'm sure he's going to just walk away. Soon enough, he started walking on the opposite direction. And I'm like, see, I told you, let's go. She's like, no, he's gonna turn around and come back. She was so funny. And I go and I say, oh, come on. And all of a sudden he was like, he crossed, like there was a small bridge going into dental school and he's crossing it. But then there's people coming into this direction. He starts talking to them and then they say goodbye. And soon enough, he starts walking towards us and he just came in front of us. And I remember he just stood there and we were sitting still in the bench. And he goes, he said, hi, girls. That's what he said. Hi, girls. And then he started talking to us, but she couldn't even speak English. So she had a, you know, she could say a couple of things and that was it. So he kept talking to me and I go, and he was kneeling down on the floor and I go and I said, you want to sit between us? I just
want to. Or do you want to propose?
And he sat between us and invited us out. And my friend was like, I don't know. This is so weird. We just met that guy.
It was her idea.
Yeah, I know. And
now she doesn't know if she wants to go through with it.
And I'm like, I'm not going out with him if you're not coming with me. I'm not going to end up getting killed by a serial killer here. You know, I don't know who he is. He had said he was going. He had just finished his last test. And so he invited us to this little bar that's still there, actually, Smokey Joe's. Yeah, Smokey Joe's, I think. Something like that. And he was a jerk. He got in there, sat us on a table with some of his friends, stayed there, said he was going to the bathroom and never came back. Literally. He went and saw a table with some of his friends and sat there with them. He had like no social manners whatsoever. So I told one of the guys I was sitting at the table after like 30 minutes, I'm like, do you mind taking me back to my place? And my friend was like, no, Mary, oh, please, come on, we're having a good time. She's talking to other kids there. And I'm like, you know what, I'm just not into this. And so he saw that I stood up, so he came back and he apologized or something like that. He said his way of apologizing, if I remember well, was something like, oh, I got distracted or something like that. And then he started talking to me, but I was not interested at that point.
That was really a turnoff, I would think.
It was a big turnoff. So he took us back. And then the funny part is that I'm like, well, maybe he liked her, not me. So how do I know? I'm not going to even think that he liked me. So the next day he called me. He didn't call her. He called me and said, can I make it up to you and take you out? And I think I didn't accept for like some days. You know, my sister was like, she asked me how it went, and I told her, and she was like, you're not going out with that guy ever again. I have a warden party, and there's plenty of cute guys there. Why don't you come with me? I should have done that.
Although his behavior wasn't exactly gentlemanly, Ben was enthralled and couldn't wait to tell his mother, Nancy, about Mary.
He called and said that he was sitting on campus at Penn and that he saw a girl, a beautiful girl walking across campus eating a peach.
Ben and Mary's relationship progressed rapidly, yet with complications that included Mary's Venezuelan citizenship.
And immigration was after me at that mm-hmm. point. And so, you know, I had been coming prior of meeting Ben for a long time because I had been coming every single year and staying here a whole summer. And then coming to visit my sister, I would come like twice and then just stay here for like a month and go back and come back and go back. And at that point, I mean, I don't even know how many times I have been coming. In 1 year, I think I came like three times. And so I got stopped in Puerto Rico coming for my birthday. He had a birthday party for me. So it was the 24th of July.
In Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. He had rented a beautiful brownstone apartment.
And you got stuck in Puerto Rico.
I got stuck in Puerto Rico. They told me I could not come back. I could not get into the country. Like they took me into an interrogation room and all this stuff. Mm. And finally, when they let me go and get to Philadelphia, I told them, you know, this is how it goes. They told me I can stay this time, but I have to go back and stay at least 6 months in Venezuela, or 3 or 6 months. It was a killer amount of months when you're dating. And he's like, no, you're not doing that. I'm like, I have to. I cannot come back. They're not going to let me in. And he's like, who cares? We'll get married before the wedding. We already were engaged. So whatever, let's just get married. So
how did you guys decide to get married?
Well, I had dated my first boyfriend in Venezuela. I dated long distance. He moved mm-hmm. to the, you know, his mother was from here, and they wanted him to go to college here in the States. So after 1 year of dating, one day said, like, you know, that I'm leaving in October, November, and the day I leave, that's it. You know, I'm not even going to give you my phone number. We're going to say goodbye, and that's it. I'm never, ever dating someone long distance ever again. That's it.
And with that, the persistent doctor in training had three primary questions. His first was,
so what would it take for you to keep dating me? And I'm like, I think I made a joke, like something like, oh, gosh, you know, I would have to get married, but my father would never let me come back here just to, like, be dating a guy again. But I don't want to get married. I said something like that because I never wanted to get married. I never wanted to have kids. So.
A couple days later, Ben took Mary to what she described as a beautiful restaurant in Philadelphia for brunch, where he posed his next big question.
Just suppose you were to marry me, would you consider converting into Judaism? And I remember looking at him. So he said, it's not as important to me as it is to my mother. And, you know, it gets a little bit complicated when, you know, when marriages have different religions. Not that I don't care about your background. It's just to make life, you know, simpler. And I remember saying, no, why would I care? I don't even do my own religion. And he said, would you talk to my mom on the phone? Would you, like, meet her today and talk to her and tell her, you know, like, don't tell her that, but just talk to her. And he called his mom. And that's the first time I spoke to her, put her on the phone. He's like, hi, Mary, I've heard from you. And, you know, Ben said wonderful things about you and blah, blah, blah. And I thought he would forget about that. I was like, oh, shoot, I don't even know this guy enough. What am I saying? I left. I didn't want to leave because I don't want to leave him. My dad was like, you're coming to graduation, period. You know, and so I left for the end of October.
The final question wasn't for Mary, and it would take a bit more time and traveling about 2,000 miles to ask it.
I'm coming to Venezuela to ask for your hand in marriage. And I remember my dad didn't even know I was dating anyone. Nobody knew about him because I promised myself after, you know, my second relationship that I would never tell my parents about a guy unless I was going to marry the guy. Never. I'm just never going to tell them what I'm doing because then it was like nightmare, you know, nightmare. So, and plus I had left Venezuela and I was still seeing like the guy that I was dating off and on. And my parents were, my mom was always so like, she wanted me to marry that guy somehow. And my dad picks me up from the airport and I go, I'm like, dad, you know, met this guy, you know. And he says he likes me a lot, and he says he wants to come meet you and ask for my hand in marriage.
Mary would later learn that Ben wasn't very good on following through on commitments. In this case, he was a man of his word.
My dad was like, what? And my dad was a very positive, nice, you know, supportive human being, was like, I doubt he'll come, Mary. I don't think that guy is going to come, but, you know, whatever you say.
Ben asked her father's permission to marry her because that was what we taught him that you're supposed to do. And he went to Venezuela and he asked Eduardo for her hand in marriage. And he said, I'm a poor dental student. I don't have a lot, you know, I don't have a lot to offer her, but I have a future to offer her. And I want her to convert to Judaism because I want my children to be Jewish. And Eduardo, to his credit, according to Ben, said to him, as long as you believe in God, I'm fine with it. And Mary took lessons in conversion, which my brother-in-law Stuart helped her with, and took her to, you know, went to classes with her or helped her with the classes. And she converted before they got married. And her parents made a Jewish wedding in Margarita, which was not easy. There was one rabbi that was willing to come and do that. And they paid for the rabbi to his transportation. They paid for him to stay at the hotel. They paid for his food. They paid everything for him.
The wedding was a beautiful affair by all accounts. On Margarita Island off the northeastern coast of Venezuela in the Caribbean Sea, more than 100 guests attended, with at least half traveling from all over the U.S.
And everybody stayed for like a week. We had a great time, you know, like partying with everybody there. And everybody loved the island and they stayed in the most gorgeous hotel. But the wedding was in one resort and the hotel was next to that resort. And it had just been built, and it was absolutely exquisite. Every room had a view of the water, and it's just so beautiful.
And before the wedding ceremony, Ben was already experiencing a happy ending. He told me many years later that the guests were waiting on him for the rehearsal dinner. In fact, Ben could see his mother-in-law-to-be glaring through the curtains as two women worked him over.
As a transgression, getting like a massage, you know, in the resort. Cheating to me is more like when you have an emotional affair with someone.
You know. I see what you mean.
So, No, he just liked to play around.
He was loyal to you from a more emotional standpoint.
He was a very
physical. That's how you kind of dealt with it to some degree, huh?
I still feel about people that way. I have friends that are married and they don't cheat on each other, but they don't love each other and they don't enjoy each other. And I have met good friends of mine that absolutely adore their wives, but they can't stop cheating, you know? Mm-hmm. But they would never do anything to jeopardize their marriage. They just don't feel like, I think that humans are not meant to be monogamous beings. And in some ways, people like to lie to themselves, you know, like, I think it's a hard, it takes certain very small amount of humans, especially men. And I'm saying men when I know women that have totally cheated on their husbands. Mm-hmm. And it is a hard, you know, when you decide that you're going to be, I think what panicked him was the forever and ever. Like he wanted to lock me in, but he wasn't done doing his thing, you know?
But you were always faithful to him, weren't you?
I was absolutely, not only I was faithful to him, I was emotionally faithful to him. I loved him so much. I loved him in such a way. And I learned to love him because I didn't like him right after I got married to him. I really didn't. For like a year, I was like, I don't even like this guy. You know, I just don't like him. I should get divorced. And then I was like, just remembering all those people that spent all that money that went to my wedding. And I felt so bad.
Interesting. People think such things. Yeah.
Oh my God, I did. I felt like, oh my God, I'm going to let everybody. And his dad, I could not break that poor guy. I just couldn't, you know. I just felt so trapped in the whole thing that I said, I better just fix it, you know. Mm-hmm. I can fix this guy.
In the next episode, you'll learn just how difficult it became to fix Dr. Ben first. Not only as a husband and father, but as an oral surgeon, bent on a path of utter destruction soon after he began practicing in the state of Florida.